Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Look out! He's only films to be buried with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I am a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a Mr. Kipling's French fancy, and I love films. As Mahatma Gandhi once said, the greatness of a nation can be judged by the way its animals are treated. And have you ever seen the film Babe? My God, the day I saw that was the day I gave up pork scratchings. Honestly, it's a masterpiece. Wow, who knew Mahatma Gandhi was such a fan of Babe? I wonder if he liked the much maligned Babe Pig in the City. I wish we could ask. I guess we'll never know. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Jamila Jamil, Ricky Gervais, Mark Kermode, and even Eddie Furlong Gamblata. But this week, my special guest is writer, stand-up, actor, and podcaster, Tom Neenan.
Announcement!
Right, it's time to announce my special guest for the 26th of February, the live show at the Islington Town Hall. You can get your tickets on the Dice app. My guest will be Tom Allen. What? Yes, that is right. Tom Allen will be doing his Films to be Buried with me at Islington Town Hall, 26th of February. Get your tickets now. Also, if you do enjoy the podcast and you want to support it and get more content, please come and join me over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get extra guest questions, you get videos, guest list tickets, recommendations, all sorts of stuff. This week, straight up, the extras, the extra questions I did with Tom Neenan. Oh, I mean, it's really gold, this one. You'd be mad to miss. You'd be absolutely mad. Anyway, give it a look over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Tom Neenan. Tom Neenan is a brilliant stand-up. He is a writer, an actor, and an all-rounder that has worked very closely with friend of the show, Nish Kumar, and who makes consistently brilliant stuff. Check out his podcast, Tom Neenan is Not All Men. It's very funny. And look up all his other brilliant stuff. He's prolific, and he's brilliant, and you will love this episode. He's also very smart, and I have to say, one of my favourite things about death and spirituality on this episode, so listen out for it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 80 of Films to be Buried With. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by a writer, a sketch writer, a radio guest, a radio host, a podcaster, a stand-up, an actor, a presenter, a showman, a magician, a warrior, and a wizard, and probably responsible for most of the comedy that you consume, but you didn't know it. Please welcome to the show the amazing Tom Neenan.
Thank you so much. I'll lay claim to every single one of those descriptions. I love it.
All true.
Yep. Magician. Weren't we all a magician for a while? Anyone who's got any kind of entertainment background, we all had the fake thumb or something to get attention
but
when we were younger.
We all magicians.
Aren't we? Oh, yeah, I didn't mean it like that. When one makes a joke, isn't it like casting a spell?
What we bring, is that not magic?
I meant more like, didn't we all get a magic set as a kid and spend like Christmas annoying our relatives for the...
Now, Tom Neenan.
Hello.
Now, we don't know each other that well, but I am jealous of you because Nish Kumar says that you're his best.
I won.
And that you write weirdness, most of the things he does?
Yeah, I'm always very sort of cautious to say that, like, when Nishi's doing stuff for TV and things, yeah, he will invite me along. But, you know, he does his own stand-up and stuff. And because I'll occasionally write on for people, like, on Mock the Week as well. And yeah, people always say, I thought they wrote their own stand-up. And I'm like, yeah, they do. I don't, that is, I just do the topical stuff and those things. Yeah. But yeah, so we work on kind of those things together and I sort of go off and do
been
my own project.
Big part of the MASH project, the MASH report. Right?
Yeah. So I'm sort of co-head writer of that. Which is absolutely delightful in terms of a job and terrible in terms of the news that you have to deal with.
Yeah,
because I think similar to you, sort of when you're in the vicinity of Nish Kumar and you've got that kind of his brain work, you know, processing the news. Sometimes you find out too much.
Yeah.
Sometimes you dig too deep and you're like, I want to be less informed.
Well, and I have actually thought, like, genuinely, since the MASH report started, it seems the news has got crazier and crazier and crazier
to
the extent that A, I think it's quite hard to make jokes about, and B, I think it's hard to have optimism about, and I wonder if you're deep in it like you are.
Yeah.
Do you not want to just kill yourself?
There's always, you know, there's always stuff that makes you go, oh, that's interesting, and that could be quite a good thing. There's mm-hmm. there's always positivity, just because the world is a big nuanced place, and often the loudest stuff is the scariest stuff. Yeah, I don't know where certain things are heading, and it'll be very interesting. But I think we'll all still be here next year.
Yeah.
I'm willing to stake that much at least.
Because when I talk to Nish about politics, he's pretty depressing.
Yeah.
He's pretty like, everything's mm-hmm. fucked. But I'm always like, is it? Do you think you're as, you know, more than I do? You've looked at this stuff more.
I don't know.
Do you feel more positive?
I just try and be positive in general. Whether mm-hmm. that's borne out by what's actually happening in the world, I don't know.
Right.
But I'll be like, hey, look at little Greta Thunberg.
Yeah.
Look at what she's doing. She's a positive influence. And
yeah.
Everyone knows her name, and, you know, maybe that kind of thing will help.
I like that.
Yeah. So there's those kind of things where I'm like, who knows?
Now, also, you have your own podcast, mm-hmm. which, hands up, I only listened to today, but true story, mm-hmm. I raced through two episodes.
Oh, amazing.
It was so funny. It is called Tom Neenan Is Not All Men.
Yes.
And it was advertised on a Kermo podcast, and I was like, oh, fancy pants. And I did not understand that what it is a fucking funny...
Oh, bless you.
It's so funny.
It's
and
lovely.
Also annoyed me because I thought so much work must have gone into it. It's like a sitcom.
Yeah. So it's like, so I did, there's two types of podcasts, and like this is the absolute top of its game in terms of the kind of, you have, you know, people in and chat about something you're really passionate about. And then there's, so sort of inspired a bit by people like Ben Partridge, who does the Beef and Dairy podcast as well.
Right.
I just sort of went away, it's based on the Edinburgh show, and I just wrote 8 episodes of this thing. And also I have really funny people in as guests who improvise and stuff as well. So it's like, it's about 80% written, and then people come in and mess around and things as well. So that's really fun.
It's got a Simpsons vibe to it.
Oh, really?
I said it, yeah.
Oh, that's incredibly high praise. Thank you so much.
In terms of like amount of jokes and little side jokes. And
oh, great.
It's really funny.
Oh, well, I'm so inspired by The Simpsons and stuff. And yeah, just if you can pack as much density of stuff into everything that you make, then I just think, hopefully it bears up to, you know, 2 or 3 listens, each of those.
How many, but as in, are you doing that every week? Because I'm worried.
Oh, no, we were commissioned for 8 for that series. So there's 8 to go out. And I think we've just sort of got provisionally, we're going to do a live one in March, I think, as well. So that should
Fantastic.
Be quite fun. And then sort of who knows after that. Well, for that lovely, I brought you a gift
you shouldn't have brought me a gift. No one has ever brought me a gift.
Really?
Before.
Well, I was
but
passing.
Now, I guess this is what has to all guests have to
exactly.
do from now on.
So this is Go this on. Represents before you look. This is the film of last year that I'd say if I had to rank all of my films that I saw last year, this just heads into the like it's better than the middle mark. So if you put the absolute average film, this is above that.
So this is a 3.5 star film.
It's a 3.5 star film that I saw in Computer Exchange for a reasonable for the change I had in my pocket. So, I'll see if you've got it.
It now. Overlord!
Have you seen Overlord?
I have seen an hour of it on a plane.
Well, now you can complete. You didn't even finish it.
Now I can finally complete it because that bloody plane landed.
Oh, there you go. Well, you can find out what happened to those.
Well, thank you so much. That's
a pleasure.
So lovely.
It's got Alison Thea Scott. The improviser Alison Thea Scott is in it.
For real?
She's got no body. She's just a head.
Right.
And yeah, I just thought it was perfect. I thought it was perfectly enjoyable and not in any way, you know, I wouldn't necessarily write home about it, but I just quite enjoyed
it. So in no way it was special to you, and you thought, I want to give this to
exactly.
This I care about it this much.
I was looking at, like, because there were some where I was looking around going, oh, that's too bad, that sounds like an insult. And I was like, no, that is exactly the gift I want to give. That sets the tone of all
he
of this.
He is a 3.5-star guy. Yeah.
Not at all. No. I heard about the plane landing, and I was like, you need to find out what happened to those zombies.
I do want to know if the zombie Nazis win or not. Thank you. It's a very violent film.
It is. It was. But I'll tell you what I was choosing between.
Yeah.
I was choosing between that one and Brawl in Cell Block 99. Did I make the wrong choice?
Too violent
for you. Two very violent films.
You seem like a violent man, Tom.
It's all simmering under the surface. Have you seen Brawl in Cell Block 99?
I have not, actually, because that I think I get upset by that much.
Right, it is a lot.
It's pretty, nasty. Mm-hmm. I'm a softy, me. I don't like seeing people get hurt, and it sounds like...
A lot of people get hurt.
Is it? I don't mind people getting emotional. No, I don't really like people getting hurt.
Yeah, I saw Marriage Story yesterday.
Speaking of people getting hurt, bloody hell.
Oh, my God.
What film?
It's so good. The clip everyone knows... is my least favourite bit of that film.
What's the clip? I haven't seen the clip.
Oh, you know, with the argument they have in the sort of empty apartment, which has become like a meme and stuff.
8-minute thing,
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't mind it, but like, because that's the clip, you sort of see it as
separate. You've seen this play before.
Exactly. Whereas everything else about it, I was like, oh my God. Oh, I wasn't prepared for it at all.
I've never seen this play.
Yeah. It's brand new. It's a brand new play.
Mm-hmm. You like films, don't you?
Love them so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a proper filmy.
Kind of. There's gaps in my knowledge. Westerns.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's millions of foreign films I haven't seen that are exceptional. But yeah, I try and have sort of a broad range.
Anti-Westerns?
No. But I won't seek one out.
Right.
It has to be really good.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the best. Yeah, so like True Grit I love.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I won't seek out a Western.
I think I'm like that about period dramas.
Right,
and then I often see them and go, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
But I never think, ooh, a period drama.
I'll race to that. Have you seen Little Women?
No, that is one I will race to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of Greg Thunberg.
Saving the planet by making films from the olden days.
Oh, Tom.
What? Oh, no.
Fuck.
Oh, God.
Oh, nuts.
Oh, no.
Oh, balls.
Oh, God.
Oh, Tom, I forgot to tell you something. Fuck.
Is it good news? Depending on your perspective.
Yeah. I should have just told you. I met you at the door and I was thinking, there's something I got to tell you.
Uh-huh.
It's just occurred to me now. Oh, I'll just say it. Mm. Oh, fuck it. I've got to say it, haven't I? There's no way around it. You'll find out soon enough. You've died. You've died.
Oh, God.
What Shit. A bummer.
Yeah.
How did you die?
Heart attack.
Is it?
Right? Heart attack. Just like nothing exciting. I eat a lot of junk food and I also do a lot of running. And that combined is going to one day catch up with me. Well, it has today.
You're eating junk food whilst running?
I try not to.
Post or pre?
Usually, I try and run in the morning, so post. But it's lingering around, isn't it, in the arteries after that.
So you run in the morning, then what, McDonald's for lunch?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
Not every day.
And then in the morning, you've gone for a run.
Yeah.
Suddenly.
Just clutch the... it was quick.
Okay.
Yeah, it was quick. And you know what? It was probably somewhere like... Wait, what? It was Crystal Palace Park.
Very nice.
Nice. So I just... Down I went.
Were there people around?
Yeah, they tried. They did the...
Did they? They did the thing.
The
stuff.
Da-dum-da-dum, staying alive. Yeah. They didn't work.
So people saw you collapse and came over. So there are good in people.
Exactly. Yeah. Look for the people that are helping. That's how
I
stay positive.
They didn't run past.
Yeah.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. And how old were you?
Oh, so not today.
Sort of up to you.
Maybe. I was probably... Oh, no.
God, you were about to say 50 and that was your genuine answer.
I was like, oh, my God.
I'm going to die at 50.
I'm still running. I'm 75 years old.
75?
Yeah.
Okay. Young lad.
Okay. I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry for your
it's
loss.
Gone.
Do you worry about death?
No. I mean, I don't want to die. And if a bus was coming towards me, I'd step out the way. I wouldn't just, like, welcome it with open arms.
You still try to avoid it.
Yeah. But it's not something that scares me necessarily. I'm quite sort of philosophical about that.
Yeah,
almost too much. I should probably have more of an instinct to want to stay alive.
But you're a worker.
Mm.
You like to work. You do a lot of work.
Yeah.
So where does that come from, if not fear of death?
I suppose, well, no, I just don't want to waste the time I've got, which, given I've said I'm going to go at 75, is not, yeah, not long.
Not long, is it?
I used to think that I wanted to go like Freud. What's the old Freud who used to do Just a Minute?
I know.
Clement Freud,
yeah.
But then, because he just, like, died writing at his desk, but then people, apparently he's not a great guy, old Clement Freud, so...
It turns out he was wanking at the same time.
So that's why I want to avoid it.
Not allegedly.
No, I think it happened, yeah. I don't think any lawyers are going to come after you regarding that. That's fine. It's like Savile, the boat sailed on anything.
Do you think there's an afterlife?
I think there's something. It's going to make me sound weird. This is
what it's for.
Personally, the way I choose to look at it is we're all part of one consciousness. We're all one consciousness.
Yeah.
This conversation right now is two parts of the same consciousness having a conversation.
Yeah.
It's what makes a mockery of racism. It wants to make a mockery of any bigotry.
Yeah.
And that we all get put, our little bit of water gets poured back into the swimming pool at the end of this huge consciousness would be much, like, I think, yeah, like a hive mind kind of thing.
I love that.
I hope so, yeah.
That's really beautiful. But if we're... So you're saying we're one big swimming pool, but life is a jug of water taken out of the swimming pool and poured into...
A flawed body that comes with... Yeah, yeah.
And then when you die, you get returned to the swimming pool.
Yeah, having learned a few extra things, maybe.
That's fucking beautiful.
I hope so. Well, I just...
But we are separate glasses of water.
We're all separate glasses.
When we're living.
Yeah, but like...
But when we die, we're the same
water. Get sent back in. I believe... I'm not a Christian... But I think that when, you know, the Bible says treat your neighbour as... love thy neighbour is a big joke, because love thy neighbour is love thyself, because everyone's the same. And that is, I don't know, even if that isn't what happens, that's how I choose to live my life, which is you sort of keeping that in the back of your mind. It stops you getting angry with people because you're like, oh, we're all, that's stupid. We're
all part of the same thing.
Yeah. That is my theory. So I'll have watched the films that I've watched. You'll have watched the films that you've watched.
Yeah.
We'll all get pulled back in that swimming pool.
Yeah.
And we'll all have enjoyed that.
We'll all have seen the same.
Yeah.
Once we're in the pool, our consciousness, like, merge again and we go, oh, Overlord, I've seen the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And maybe, because there are people who believe that, like, heaven on earth, the reason we're on earth is to get heaven on earth, is what sort of the progress of the human race is, and that will be a joint consciousness as well. But maybe the internet is helping by linking us all up. But I think at the minute we're in those stages where it's not helping and it's making everyone angry that we're all... But you know, were the universe... Or were the Earth to survive another 20,000 years, we'd eventually all sort of, you know...
People think the point of life is to bring heaven to Earth.
Yes, yeah.
So there is heaven over there, but we need to bring it here.
Yeah, so we're like, I suppose, what people would call utopia? I'm lost now, I'll be honest, I'm out of my depth.
I love it.
But it's out of my... The deep end of the swimming pool.
And do you think internet? Do you think it was a bad thing to invent?
I think it's flawed at the minute. I think we're not good enough for it to use it for all the stuff it could be used.
Yeah.
Like there are people using it for brilliant stuff, but also there's a whole bit which is the whole. I suppose what happens when you do, if you just lock 100 people in a room? Some people would sit down and discuss ideas, and other people would fight over. If you can smoke in there or not, or whatever.
Yeah. Man, I love that swimming pool. You made that up out of your head?
No, I think it's a really botched, like, combination of, I suppose, a bit of Buddhism and a bit of, like, other things.
It's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, I hope it's the case, but I think you're about to tell me it might not be.
Well, it's not quite that, but there is a heaven.
Nice.
And you know what?
Mm?
In this episode, it's a giant swimming pool.
Lovely stuff.
And in that swimming pool, you've got gills.
Nice.
You're like Kevin Costner in Waterworld.
Perfect.
You're happy.
Yeah.
People didn't check the box office. They just watched the quality of the film and decided it was good.
Yeah. That's comforting.
Yeah, and in this giant swimming pool where we're all Tom Neenan.
Yeah. And we're all Brett Goldstein.
And we're all Brett Goldstein. We're all everyone.
Yeah.
We're all the makers of Overlord.
Nice.
J.J. Abrams and the director, Julius Avery.
Nice.
And in this swimming pool, technology isn't what it doesn't short circuit. Electricity's fine.
Perfect.
In this swimming pool.
Lovely.
And there are cinemas everywhere.
Yeah.
And in the swimming pool, all the consciousnesses want to know about is film. They're obsessed with film. They're obsessed with your life through the medium film. Everyone's having to catch up because you've been away. You've been in your little jug. You come back to the pool. What's been going on in your life?
Yeah.
With the films, the first thing they ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing?
Right.
When you were that jug.
So the first film I remember going to see, but I do not remember seeing it, is the Bar Bar movie. They made a film out of Bar Bar the Elephant, but I remember walking to the cinema to see that film.
Yeah.
And my dad went, oh, cinema's closed. And I was like, oh. And they went, oh, no, it's not. And I was like, yes. But I don't remember anything about that film at all. But the first film I remember, I have a vivid memory of watching is Jurassic Park.
Great.
Yeah.
What? That was your first film?
It's the one that, like, I'm sure I saw films before, but, like, I think that's the one that I just have this vivid memory of being stuck to my chair and my mum going, do you want to leave? Because I was, like, clearly I was, like, just sort of stuck to my chair and me sort of going, no, I'm hating this because it's so scary and I'm loving it because, like, I've never felt anything like this before. Like, it's obvious. I think I would have been introduced to it, like, to film. I probably saw some, like, Disney ones, but... Yeah. I just, as soon as, when, you know, you ask that, and all I remember is sitting in that chair, and my mum going, we can go out if you want. And I was like, no, the raptors are in the kitchen. I'd never be more scared in my life than, at that point than the raptors being in the kitchen. And, yeah, so that's...
How old were you, do you know?
I would have maybe been 7.
Okay.
I think so.
And you're with your mum?
Yeah, with my mum and my dad.
And your dad?
Yeah.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
No.
Okay.
So it's just me, and it was the one... I must have seen... films before so that's the one that
where is this taking place?
Greenwich Odeon, which is now Greenwich Picture House.
Is that where you grew up, in Greenwich?
We live nearby. We lived in Lewisham, and that would be the nearest one, and we always went there, and it was Carlton Screen Advertising, which had the big branding star and things, and I just, all that stuff was part of the cinema for me, and I just remembered all, like, getting really excited about those things and sitting there and just not quite understand. I think I didn't quite understand a lot of it. I got sad when the lawyer got eaten off the toilet. Everyone around me thought that was hilarious, but I was like, oh no,
you were like, he was just trying to do his job.
Yeah. I think I started just watching. I was like, I'd sit on the toilet. That's me.
I practice law.
Yeah. So that's the first film. But yeah, I'm sure there were others before that. But yeah, that's the one I...
And you've not checked the Bar Bar film?
I have not gone back and watched the Bar Bar movie.
That must be a tough watch.
Yeah.
The Barber film.
I can't think what my dad would have got out of that. Like, yeah. I think
what I'm interested in the story of that is, did your dad, when he said, I think the cinema's closed, was that genuine? He thought it was closed. Oh, no, it's open. Or did he genuinely, as he was walking there, think, I don't want to fucking see this. And he went, it's closed. Then he saw your little face and he went, oh, right, it's open.
I think for him, I think he was saying the truth the whole time. And I think he went, oh, it's closed. Oh, it's closed. And then he went, oh, it's open. We'll go and see Barbara on the movie.
Come on then, let's do this. Better not have a cliffhanger ending. We've got to go see that one.
That's what they do with the Barbara films. They do. Yeah. They try and rinse all the money out that you can. So it's like part three is two parts in the end. God damn it. God damn it, Barbara.
Fucking Barbara. Yeah. What is the film that made you cry the most?
Right. So there's a few. Number one is quite a worthy one, which is the documentary Bully that came out in 2011.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Purely because I think you can't watch a film about kids being bullied and not be like, this is horrible. This is like, I want to intervene in some way. Mm. So there's that one. Days of Glory, which is a French film.
Yes.
About North African soldiers in the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because they're amazing. My favourite war film. I think it's absolutely astonishing. Oh, yeah. And it's basically about the Muslim soldiers who went out to fight for the Allies and were ignored, completely ignored. And it's like one of those, you get upset at the end because of the injustice and the kind of, you want to get
when
more
was
involved.
This made?
I think it was made in 2008, 2007. Okay. I think it won either one best foreign language film at the Oscars or was nominated. And I saw a friend of mine from secondary school as I came out the cinema, and we were both crying, a lady called Rania, and we were both like going, oh, that's really good, how are you? You well? Yeah, no, I'm okay. And that was a proper gut punch. And the other one is not usually considered a sad film, and it's not for the minute you might think, is The Sixth Sense.
Mate.
Yeah?
I cried when I saw The Sixth Sense first time.
Oh, good. Yeah. For me, it's the twist is great, and that's really moving. It's the bit in the car where Hayley Joel Osment's talking about seeing the
grandma.
Yeah. and talking to the grandma, and the grandma's like at the dance recital.
Yeah.
And I just caught it on TV. I was watching The Sixth Sense on TV. And I was like, oh, we all know The Sixth Sense. Oh, it's fun. And there's the, you know, it's a bit scary and everything else. And then that bit came on and suddenly it just like, it blindsided me. And I was like, well done, M. Night Shyamalan. That's
the twist.
Yeah. This is a sad film. Yeah. I thought that was, he is brilliant. And that's why I think people get frustrated with M. Night Shyamalan, because they're like, but you wrote like one of the most perfect films. It's got everything. It's like, it's ingenious and it's scary and it's sad and it says so much about the human condition and all these things. That I'm just a bit like...
He's got a real... Hang on, there's many questions here.
Okay.
One is, are you comfortable crying in front of people? Are you a crier?
I'm not a big crier. I tell you what happens a lot of the time is that I feel that, you know, when the tightness in the throat, the Adam's apple... when something's happening, and I'll be like, oh my God, this might turn into an actual emotional moment, and then I can't muster it, and I'll be like, oh, you know, I've got crying blue balls. I'm like, come on. So I don't cry a lot of films and stuff, and if I go and see a film alone, it's a nice sort of cathartic thing to do, but I don't think I'm a big crier. That's why that caught me by surprise. I was just like, maybe it's because I went in not expecting anything. There's, it's about Marriage Story.
Yeah.
That bit in Marriage Story, which really struck me as true, is at the end, spoiler alert for that film, but like when Adam Driver's reading all the compliments about himself and then he just like, he says something and then he like has to catch himself and he's like, that was a very sort of realistic.
Yeah.
Because often they say that the thing that makes you cry isn't watching someone else cry in a film, but someone like being...
trying not to cry.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you make the leap, you make the emotional leap that they can't.
Oh, is that right?
I think so. That's certainly my interpretation of it. It's like... That's you see someone being strong and you're like, oh, I'll be weak for you. I'll be the weak one.
I'll take this.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Mm.
I think there's something about The Sixth Sense. I had the DVD, like, I think I had the American DVD.
Oh, wow.
And it had loads of extras on it.
Yeah.
And one of the things, it's just interesting because you know from making stuff, the stuff you cut, and I think Sixth Sense is really moving.
Yeah.
There was a thing that was cut, and in the deleted scenes, he said, oh, this was my favourite scene I shot, and it was so hard to cut. And I was it's really good that you cut that, because the difference between the scene that you cut and the rest of the film is the scene you cut is really cheesy.
Oh, really?
And what it was there was a video of Bruce Willis's wedding that his wife is watching. She keeps watching their wedding day, and he does this thing in it where he speaks in rhyme when he's drunk. She says to him, you speak in rhyme, you sound like Dr. Seuss when you're drunk. And he's really drunk and he's saying something like, I love you, I am poo. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, he's just sort of rhyming to her drunk. And you sort of go, it's sort of a nice idea, I like the idea.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's a bit shit.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Like, and it's definitely intended to be moving. And,
yeah.
And it's right on the edge of not quite
That's interesting.
Working.
Because that line stays in, doesn't it? You sound like Dr. Seuss when you're drunk.
There's more of that, basically.
Yeah.
You get to see...
I'm glad that's just a nice thing that tells you about the relationship and doesn't actually turn into... You don't see it.
Some rhyming.
Yeah, because actually, it's a nice thing that a couple have observed about each other.
Yeah.
The second you see it, you're like, oh, it's not as cute as I thought it would be.
It's like in The Visit, if you see The Visit. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
The beginning of The Visit, I hated the kid so much.
Oh, right.
The rapping kid.
Yeah,
and
on
paper you go, oh yeah, kid rapping, that'll be charming.
Yes.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah.
But then I really liked the film. I was like, cut that awful rapping
the
kid.
Rapping bit. It's weird, isn't it? Yeah, Into the Spider-Verse starts with, he's not rapping, he's singing along, and he's sort of half singing along, which I think we all go, actually, that's where it's fun. Is you go, I do that. I do the thing where you're like, which is more fun than like trying to rap, which is that's interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, good answers.
Yes,
you're doing very well. Now, you said Jurassic Park, but what is the film that scared you the most?
Right.
Sub question.
Hello.
Now, as I say, I'm afraid I don't know all your stuff.
Yeah.
Nish Kumatawa, you make a load of horror.
Yeah.
Parodies? Horror.
Kind of. I try and make them genuinely like. I suppose parrot like pastiche. I don't know. I do a show on Radio 4, which is called The Hauntening, and is like modern ghost stories.
Oh wow!
And I try and make them all actually scary.
Yeah.
Because I love the mechanics of being scared. I love all of that stuff. So sorry, did you finish your?
No, well, you're answering it.
Okay. I love being scared, and I've been chasing that dragon of sitting in watching Jurassic Park and being terrified. And no film has really, I don't think, managed. I loved, I can't remember the name of it. Oh, my God. So you got Hereditary, yeah. You know what I'm going to say. A Midsommar. I think they're incredible. Even those, I'm like, I know it's Toni Collette.
Right.
And like, I appreciate it for the art that it is, mm-hmm. But it doesn't get me like in there.
Right.
As a kid, I was terrified of the end of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
With the acid sludge.
Yeah, thing. The sludge, Judge Doom.
Yeah.
The horrible squeaky voice when he inflates himself, all that stuff I thought was really scary and really horrible. And like, it's quite a dark film anyway. Yeah. Like, Eddie Valance is an actual alcoholic. Like, they don't make him like...
It's really dark, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very like, I think for a lot of kids, it might come up later, it's like an introduction to a lot of adult things. Like, you've got overt sexuality, you've got those things. And he's genuine, like the shoe that gets killed, all that stuff. And then I was trying to think of other films that have really scared me. And I think when you feel like a film's properly gone off the rails, when you're like, oh, I don't know where we are anymore, that's fun. So, and the time I've had that most recently is watching Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. And exactly because of everything I hear and read about it, I'm like, that is a film that will profoundly upset me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the first times I've gone, I don't think I share the same morality as the director.
Yeah.
Like, I think this might just be a bad film, and somehow it slipped through the net and people, like, you know, like it. But because I don't know anyone who's in it, even if you watch something like Clockwork Orange, which arguably has a similar thing where it revels in violence and all this horrible stuff, you know that Malcolm McDowell sort of goes on to be quite an avuncular...
Yeah, nice man.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas with these, I don't know what the actor went on to do, and it's just like, some of it, there's a bit where they jam a screwdriver into a guy's hand, and it genuinely, it's not like a gory 80s film where you can see that it's made of rubber or whatever. It all looks really genuine and really like, did they just, like, film this and kill their mates? It's really scary. So one where I'm like, but then... I love, obviously, like Hereditary and things, which... And another film I saw quite recently, I was like, well done, this is really good, is The Conjuring 2.
Hands in the air.
Yes.
The Conjuring 2 is a masterpiece.
It's so good.
It's so well done.
Yeah. I love... Because obviously you get the nun. The nun is introduced, the scary nun. You've got... I love that scene where... It's sort of a slow, it's not all jumps, the slow burner of the scare when they turn their back on the girl and she goes out of focus.
I was going to say, it's one of the best scenes ever.
It's so good,
such
isn't it?
Such a clever scene.
Yeah. And
so
it's
scary.
Like, there's obviously use of CGI in that, but it's my favourite use of, probably use of CGI in modern film.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I love what you're doing here. She morphs and then she morphs back and she's had the water in her mouth the whole time. And I was like, I just love that scene because it was horrible. The whole thing was horrible, but it was, it's absolutely genius.
Oh, I'm glad you like that. I think it's fucking brilliant.
I don't know why... People like the Conjuring films, right? They didn't like the Nun, necessarily.
I think they don't like the spin-offs, all the spin-offs.
Right, yeah.
I also think Conjuring Part 2... Mm. I don't know, it's the sort of underrated because it's... Partly because it's called Part 2.
Yes, yeah, people just...
Partly because it's very mainstream, I guess. But fuck, it's a good old ghost train ride.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Also, because it's set in East London.
Yeah.
So it's one of those films where you're like, oh, I know houses that look like that. And I know people like that. And so rather than being out in the middle of nowhere in the States, you go, oh, that actually feels really close to home. Yeah. I think they've got like a Joanna Lumley poster on the wall. And I'm like, I've seen Joanna Lumley at a thing. And that's like, that's really scary.
And there's a couple of American actors doing East End accents, which is always fun.
Yep.
It's great. Okay.
Love it.
Oh, I want to hear, I'm going to have to listen to this horns thing then, aren't I?
Oh, yeah, I think...
Fucking hell, I'm not busy enough. Tom Neenan is not all men.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, you're giving me a lot to do. But yeah, because horror, I mean, we talk about it briefly.
Yeah.
I think it's all been said, but horror and comedy, the same thing.
It's absolutely same thing. The structure of a scare and the structure of a joke are the same.
Yeah.
It's sort of like... Ideally, you set up three bits of information, and by dropping the fourth one in, you either go, oh, what a great surprise, or you go, what? Oh, no. And that's what I love. Yeah, it's the same mechanics and stuff. I think it's... Have you been in any horror films?
I'm in a film called Howl.
Howl. Yeah. Is that a werewolf?
Werewolves.
Oh, check that out.
I'm in very, very briefly at the beginning.
Okay. I think that's my dream, is to be in a horror film, just because I think I love the... apparently they're most fun to work on, right? Like, Hereditary, everyone just had a great time making it, because you can't be in, like... You can't be in that mental state the whole time.
Yeah.
So actually, often horror films are the films that people say they enjoyed making the most. Unless it's The Exorcist, in which case everyone was sort of dying or...
being shot at.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Having a rotten old time.
Yeah.
Mm.
And also, horror filmmakers are generally lovely people.
Yes. Yeah,
traditionally.
Yeah. I think that's why, yeah, horror and comedy, sometimes you can be watching a comedy and there could be something, there can be just a moment of horror that you weren't expecting. There's an episode of 30 Rock that ends, it's the episode called about Leap Day William. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, go on.
He's like, Leap Day William is like this weird, they create this fictional character who's like about leap days and he comes out the sea. And at the end, there's this old man going, well, that's the story of Leap Day William. And then he opens his mouth and he's got gills and his mouth opens too wide. And you're like, oh, God, that's so horrible. Because it's in a friendly comedy, it almost hits harder than if you're like, you know, when you go and see a horror film, you're like, you sort of tense your muscles and you're like, okay, I'm ready for this. Whereas sometimes you see something and you're like, oh, I wasn't prepared. And that is, and now I'm freaked out.
You know what I big up a lot? Because in terms of like psychologically or the understanding how the brain works, and that I think is what it's been overdone, but it's Paranormal Activity.
Oh my God, Paranormal Activity is so good.
A masterpiece. And Paranormal Activity 2 has this device where a camera is placed on a fan that oscillates left to right.
Yeah.
So the camera goes left and then it goes right.
Yeah.
And then it goes left. And then it goes right. And then it goes left. There's a fucking ghost there.
It's like
rule of three. And it just...
Yes,
and, and you're just waiting. There's going to be something. It's
gonna
the be second
so
time
horrible.
Is the same.
Yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? So clever.
It's brilliant. Yeah, that's the one. It goes back. And then all of the furniture is like in the air. And it just all falls at the same time. It's so good. Mm. They were so creative. And I think that's actually almost... You want to find the next brilliant horror film that isn't by Ari Aster.
Yeah.
And it will be something that's made for, like, what was the Blair Witch was made for, like...
Tuppence.
And then that, I think...
it was tuppence.
It was it was a shiny tuppence. And then they made Paranormal Activity for less than that.
Yeah.
And I think the next brilliant horror film will be made for free.
Yeah.
And it will just be, on like an iPhone or something. Because it's actually, that's one of the genres where no money makes you more creative and makes it even scarier, I think.
Yeah. Also, another thing I've just realised, Paranormal Activity, which I followed because I'd read about it for ages before it got, like, released.
Yeah.
I was so excited to see it. Mm-hmm. And I know that and Creep as well, I think this is what happens to films like that, is it was small and made by, you know, people who weren't in the industry, as it were. And then film festivals or whatever, people saw it and it got buzz.
Yeah.
And then when it was bought by the studio that released it, they changed the ending. And the ending, in both cases, they changed the ending to a much more... high octane dramatic ending. Paranormal Activity ends with the body being thrown against the wall, and Creep ends with a dramatic ending. But
is Creep the one set in the London Underground?
No, sorry, Creep, the Patrick Bryce film.
Right, yeah.
With Mark Duplass.
Yes.
And their both original endings were quite sort of small, more sort of like. You'd think about them after it's quite dark, just sort of like, oh, but nothing.
Yeah.
Pow! Like, I think the original Paranormal Activity ending was the woman disappears and you just see a news report about a murder in a house.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because she turns up in, like, I was quite thinking, I don't think they're going to do it, but it felt like Paranormal Activity was building up with some big mythology that was going to lead to, like, some Avengers Endgame style film that tied it all together.
Well, they did in the marked ones.
Oh, maybe ones, I didn't understand the ending of that.
It ends with her coming out the door.
Right.
So, and what you
realise...
Oh, it's
time travel, isn't it, or something?
Like, basically, the ghosts in Paranormal Activity 1 are the marked ones from Paranormal Activity, the marked ones.
Oh, right.
They're the ones slamming the door because no one can see them. They're going through the door and they're going, I'm here, and no one can see them. It's just a door.
Clever. Yes.
Clever.
Very clever. Too clever for me. I did not get that.
Anyway.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Mm-hmm.
What is the film that you used to love? You loved it. You watched it recently and you've gone, oh no.
I feel really bad about this one.
That's okay.
Because I love... everyone involved in this film.
Yeah.
And until I loved this film, when I was younger, I absolutely loved it. Human Traffic.
Oh, boy, I used to love Human
Traffic. Yeah, yeah.
Not and good?
I think maybe too much stuff borrowed from it.
Okay.
But now, and it feels quite... I don't know. I don't want to use words like obnoxious, but I suppose it has to, right? Films should feel obnoxious if they're going to break some ground. But
I guess that is very specifically dated, Human Traffic. Off the top of my head, having not watched it recently.
Yeah, you can pinpoint the era.
It's exactly, and unlike, of its time.
Yeah, and you can't watch it as a, you can't watch it like you can watch Clueless, and it now feels like a museum piece, and you can still watch it, and it's brilliant. But it feels like you go, oh, it's a decade frozen in aspect, and you're like, that is great. You sort of go, oh, that's how we felt at the time. We all loved...
Pills?
Pills. We all loved the Pills. Who's the stand-up who he watches? Who's the guy? He died at, like, 34, smoked
a lot. Bill Hicks.
Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a bit where he's like, Bill Hicks, he's like, Preacher Man, and all that stuff. And I feel like a lot of that now, we go, you're right. Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like, all the masculinity stuff. I don't, you know, I haven't rewatched it soon enough to sort of know how that all pans out in terms of the sort of those characters. I just remember when mentioned that, and I was like, oh yeah, and there's like Howard Marx does like a beat poem or something at one point. I think it threw everything at it, and some of it has actually gone, it still ages really well, and some of it you're like, oh, now you wouldn't do that. It's a very ambitious film.
No Human Traffic, no Danny Dyer.
That is true. I'm not willing to take that.
Thank you, Human Traffic.
Yeah, exactly. John Sim as well, doing a great job, and the guy...
God, I've got real love for that film in my heart. I'm not going to watch it again, just in case it's right.
I think I've got it on DVD. You know what? This might be the one I ask you to cut. I'll rewatch it, and I'll be like, actually, it holds up like nothing else. I feel so bad.
Joe Brand plays Earth.
Oh, yes.
Remember that? Danny Dyer's having a proper... Got the fear.
Yeah.
And Earth is Joe Brand. I says, Danny, or whatever his name is, come back.
Forgotten that. Andrew Lincoln... is in it as well.
Off his nut, in it.
Yeah. And they do that thing which now, I think probably there's a lot of Woody Allen in there as well, because it's that thing where like they talk and they go, oh, hi, I just run into you and I said hello and I didn't mean to and now we have to have a little conversation. And they sort of talk the subtext and stuff and that feels like it's borrowed from sort of early Woody Allen and things as well. Maybe I do need to give it another go.
I think we're going to have a screening.
Yeah, we should do.
Bring some pills, we'll watch
you. Oh, that'd be so...
That might be the reason it didn't hold up, as you watched it sober.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't have that moment of, like, because I watched it when I was very young as well. And you just think, oh my God, I want to be these guys. And even though they apparently have they have an awful life, and John Sims' mum's a sex worker and stuff.
Yeah. Let's ask the Prince Charles Cinema if they'll do a pill along Human Traffic screening.
Yeah, you have to match them pill for pill.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
If Prince Charles is listening, not Prince Charles, but the cinema.
And
if Prince Charles is listening, shout out. Hello, mate.
Hey, guys. Great work. Love your work.
Good answer. What is the film that most people don't like, critically not acclaimed, but you're like, you are all dum-dums. This is a great film.
So this isn't one that is derided. People like it, I think. I think it's a solid 3-star.
Okay.
But when I see people talking about, when it comes around to Christmas and people say, oh, Home Alone. Home Alone's amazing. It's the Christmas film. I always go, what about Mouse Hunt?
Mouse Hunt's a quality film.
I like Mouse Hunt. Gore Verbinski.
Yeah.
And I think, why isn't it on every Christmas like Elf?
That's
like
a great point.
Like Home Alone. It's a Christmas film. It's all set in the snow. It's got the slapstick.
Yeah.
It's got two comedy actors at the absolute top of their game.
Yeah.
I think it's just so much fun, so funny, and I don't know why it isn't part of, like, that, you know, the family film. Exactly, yeah. Whereas, like, now you get... Home Alone feels like it's now gone into this... Maybe it's because everyone who watched it when they were younger is now an adult, and sort of they start making like videos deconstructing it and, you know, what would have actually happened to these guys if they'd been injured or whatever. But yeah, I don't know why Mouse Hunt doesn't have its place in the pantheon of those. And the other one is quite a recent one, which once again wasn't particularly wasn't sort of panned, but which is Man Up, the Lake Bell, Simon Pegg rom-com, which I can watch like quite happily. I've got it on Blu-ray because I was like, oh, I'll happily chat this on. And it's silly, and it's one of those films that's set in one night, which I quite enjoy.
Yeah.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge is in it. She's got a little cameo as well.
Everyone's in it. Sharon Hogan pops up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's just like, it's a load of fun. It's a load of fun. And yeah, that's one where I'm just like, I'll happily go along with this. Lake Bell is just such a... Why isn't she in more films? She's such a charming, like, screen presence.
Oh, I think she's been doing a sitcom in...
Oh, is that right?
Called Bless This Mess or something like that.
Oh, right. Okay, I'll check it out.
Yeah, she's busy. She's all right.
Fair enough. She's doing all right.
Don't worry.
It's a good English accent. Best English accent I've heard from an American in quite a while.
Since Renée Zellweger.
Yeah. Absolutely nailing it.
Yeah.
So that's another one that I'll happily chuck on. But I think maybe people like it. I think people like it. But it's not, doesn't get talked about.
Mouse Hunt is a lovely film.
I love
good
it.
Shout.
It's very warm-hearted.
You're right. Put it on telly occasionally, guys.
Yeah, come on. And then it will just become like Elf, like the Grinch, and you'll just see it all
Do
the time.
Do you know what I think should be a Christmas film?
Yeah.
And is criminally underrated, and I think one of the great films is The Aviator.
Oh, really?
I think The Aviator is a rewatchable. It's very long.
Nice,
but it's sort of in three parts. If you split it up into three parts...
Yeah.
I think it's a Christmas film. I think it's a real, like, Christmas day. You could watch it.
That's nice.
It's sort of epic, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's got dark. It's great.
I think Christmas Day is the day for long films.
Yeah.
I think that's when a three-hour film really comes into its own, when, like, everyone's just... There's sort of nothing to do on Christmas. So if you can go the next 3 hours, from 1 till 4...
We're going to watch The Fucking Alien.
Yeah.
And then Mouse Hunt.
That's a good Christmas day.
Yeah.
That sounds wonderful.
What a perfect day.
Yeah.
Why is The Aviator not talked about in everyone's top 10 Scorsese? Discuss.
I don't know.
It's good,
did it
right?
Yeah, I like it.
I think
did
people
it fall
liked
the cracks?
It, but I don't hear it talked about since the year it was out.
Yeah.
But people liked it when it came out, and then no one's revisited it.
And it wasn't one of those that I think did loads of Oscar business, and then everyone sort of reevaluated it, did it? It didn't do much great Oscar
business. It got nominated for shit.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think it was like... critically acclaimed, and then I just never see people talk about it.
No.
Like, come on, guys. I've got the poster on my wall.
Really?
Yeah.
I like it. Keeping it alive.
Yeah. People come around and go, oh, yeah.
That's a thing.
The Aviator. That happened. What is the film that means the most to you? Not because of the film itself, because the experience you had around seeing it that you will always remember that film for.
Nice. This one was so easy.
Oh, yeah?
Because I am now married.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I decided I wanted to propose with one of the what do they call them? What are they called above the cinema where you put the letters on? They're called something like the Reader or the... They've got a technical name.
Oh, I see.
Name.
I have no idea.
At the East Dulwich Picture House.
Yeah.
And so I invited my girlfriend to the East Dulwich Picture House, and I pre-arranged it to say, Ali, will you marry me on that?
No.
Yeah, that was really nice. And she didn't know. She thought, like, occasionally, because we're both freelancers, we'll go to the cinema during the day and see something. And so I got tickets to Lady Bird.
Fucking great.
Yeah. It ended up being perfect.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't seen it, obviously. I just heard good things. And then I proposed there. And then what they do, if you arrange it for them, you have to pay them to do that kind of thing. But then you get free champagne. And then we sat you at the back, and it was at the East Village Picture House, which has little sofas at the back. Yeah. So we sat at the back there, and Lady Bird is just my then fiance said that it mirrored a lot of her relationship with her mum.
Yeah,
like for me, it didn't. I just thought it was great, and I loved all the performances. Mm-hmm. But it meant so she that day for her was an emotional roller coaster. It was all
so
over
you
the
were
place.
Walking to the cinema, and then she sees on the reading.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have to sort of, with the East Dulwich, you don't have it on the outside. You have to go inside to sort of see it.
Right.
So it's actually quite nice and contained, because I didn't want it to be, if you go to the Ritzy, they've got it on the outside and it's very public. And I thought she probably wouldn't like that because it's a bit much.
So she saw it, and then what? You went down on one knee?
I didn't get down on one knee. I was just like, what I did is I went in. I know. I should have. Why? Should have gone the whole hog. I went, can you just double check what other films are... So I said, can you just double check what other films are on at the cinema?
Yeah.
And so she was looking everywhere apart from there. And she's like, I don't know, there. She's looking over at the ticket place. And I was like, no, just look at where the thing is. And then she was like, that. And then I think she was like, someone else is called Ali. And then she realised. And so that was nice.
Oh,
that was
a
nice moment. And we're slightly obsessed with the...
Who the fuck is Ali?
I know. There was a moment where she's just like, okay. And there's a lovely thing. We're slightly obsessed with the, those little felt people that are in the Picture House adverts.
Yes.
They have those little felt animations. Yeah. And we're obsessed with the felt animation of La La Land. Because they sort of do this very basic recreation of the dance that they do in La La Land.
Yeah.
And so whenever that comes on, we sort of recreate this weird dance. And so I'd ask them to put up like little images of the La La Land pictures around there.
Were you very nervous walking there? Was your heart thumping in your chest thinking, this is it?
I was okay. I think I was what there was like some quite nice basic stuff to worry about, like that they'd spelt it all right, that it was there, that I hadn't got the wrong day and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So turning up and sort of just spying it in the corner and then being like, okay, this is going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then I was mainly worried that the film wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But then it was Lady Bird. It's Lady Bird. Wow. Who doesn't love Lady Bird?
Amazing.
It's such a lovely film, and it's just, and it was the perfect, because it doesn't, it's heartwarming, and it just, I think it just was a nice film for that time, so it fit nicely. So yeah, that was the easiest one for me to answer, because I was like, oh, it's Lady Bird, we've got the tickets framed in our film room as well. So that's nice.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
How long had you been together before you got married?
A mere 12 years. I just think of all the other films I could have gone to see that are around that time as well, and it could have been easily one where we came out and were like, that's right.
I guess that's what our marriage is going to be like.
Yeah, yeah.
Three stars.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Like, we both went, I'm not a big fan of La La Land. I didn't particularly enjoy it. And it could have easily have been, a few months earlier, it could have been La La Land, and we could have gone like, all right, yeah. They split up at the end because she gets really successful, so.
Because she gets a job.
Yeah. That's fun.
She gets a job and he immediately assumes, we can't be together then, can we?
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got a job.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Mm.
What is the film that you most relate to?
Right, Election.
Which character or all of it?
Reese Witherspoon in Election.
Really?
And I say that knowing she is the antagonist. She is the baddie of that film. She's the one who you don't like. But you do a bit because it's Reese Witherspoon. So, of course, you like. But I suppose everyone's slightly the antagonist in that film. Matthew Broderick is not a good man. It's just a lot of people who are messed up trying to find their way. But I saw that when I was in, maybe I was, I can't remember how old I was, but certainly at school, I remember thinking, and like, I like the idea of being an overachiever. I'm not sure I was, but I like the idea of it. And certainly that made me think that like, oh, I'd love to have that status. You know, that's, it's something to aim for. And so then I was like, right, okay, I'm Tracy Flick. I'm going to make this who I am. And like you say, I'm a worker. And I think that anyone who is diligent, like yourself as well, you see someone like that and you're like, she puts the work in. And that, you know, she has bad interpersonal skills, but you can't deny that she works hard and is deserves it.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, I rewatched it after the 2016 election as well, because that was the Hillary story of just like this woman who was like, I am destined for this thing and I've worked for this thing and I basically assume I'll get it.
Yeah.
And then is scuppered by an idiot, an idiot.
By an angry man.
Yeah, exactly.
God, that's interesting.
Mm. But I realised that I should do something where I should be a bit more humble, but then I don't think she's a good character.
She's a very flawed character.
Yeah.
I think that's very bold of you.
It's a bit that. I just love Election as well. I think it's one of my favourite films. It's beautiful.
He's got softer Alexander Payne. He's got softer with age, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His first three films are so, not necessarily bleak, but although they have love in them, I do think they have quite a dark view of humanity.
So we've got Repo Man. Is that one of his?
No.
No? Maybe.
Sorry, Election's his first, I think.
It's
Alexander Payne. And then he did Sideways.
Yes.
And he did, but recently he did Downsizing.
Oh, I haven't seen Downsizing. It's on Sky
Movies.
Which
is a more, bigger, sort of hopeful.
Okay.
And then he did The Descendants.
Yes,
and
did you
Nebraska,
about Schmidt?
And did about Schmidt.
Yes, yeah. That's another cry.
Yeah.
When he gets the letter at the end from the nurse. Yeah.
But they're all quite, I'd say they've got more negative than positive in them.
Yeah. I don't think he learns a lesson. Like, I don't think Matthew Broderick learns that his life falls apart.
Yeah.
And he sort of is just piecing it back together, but he hasn't learned anything. He's still a bad guy, I think. Maybe he is sort of softening. Maybe that happens when you get older.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. And all his films have this sort of thing of, Sideways has it, About Schmidt has it, The Election has it, of sort of building towards this thing that if it were the sort of film you're used to, there'd be this big triumphant climax fight. And usually the character either backs out of it or realises, oh, I probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah. I think I've only seen Sideways once, and I think my interpretation of it is different, because when he's drinking in the McDonald's or whatever, drinking that wine he's been saving, I thought that was a wonderful moment. I thought that was a man just going, I'm going to stop putting off happiness.
Yeah.
but maybe not. Maybe it's really bleak.
I think you're right. Well, that's also because you enjoy junk food, so you're like, this is such a happy
ending. Great time. He's having a lovely day.
he's nailed it.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Mm. What is... Here we go, Tom.
Hello.
Uh-oh. What is the sexiest? Oh, what is the film you found the sexiest?
I know. What I do now is, if I was the character of my podcast and I was tempted to be like, here's Girl Friday, because it's like the banter between the two, and oh my God, and it's sparkling.
Yeah.
At the same time, I will watch Super Vixens and be like, right. Mother, the lizard bit of my brain will be like, this is sexy, right? Yeah. I mean, but what more do you want? This is like activating all the sexiest things. But to go somewhere in the middle of those, this is a weird one. Resident Evil. The first Resident Evil film.
Mila Jovovich. Yes.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Lovely.
Also, you've got...
Zombies.
Zombies. Sexy zombies. I think everyone in that film is gorgeous, right? Without exception.
Yeah.
There's like... God, who's the guy who gets cut into squares who's in all the Bond films?
Colin Salmon?
Yes.
Oh.
Purefoy, James Purefoy. It's just like a very handsome cast of beautiful people, and they've all got guns, and they're all being very athletic. And I remember just thinking, Miljovic in that red dress looks astonishing. The whole thing about, like, it's meant to be like Alice in Wonderland, which is all about sort of maturing as well, because she like goes through a looking glass, and there's a red queen who chops off everyone's heads and all that stuff. Yeah, and so I suppose it carries with it that kind of... But Alice in Wonderland is meant to be about sort of loss of innocence and things as well. So I guess it's similar to that.
Yeah.
Also, I can't remember how old I was, but it was just absolutely...
You were also like,
yeah. It's Miljovic. And at the end, she's got that weird paper dress on. Mm. That's very strange as well.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Still making them, I think. I think there's about to be Resident Evil 12.
Is there?
The final countdown or something.
That is one where the drop-off of quality is instant with those. Like, the second... like. From the second one onwards, they are not great. But the first one, I think, holds up and is quite a fun film. Paul W.S. Anderson is...
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I salute him. He's great.
He does... he loves the thing where there's a schematic, where a 3D schematic, so you know where you are at every point in the film. That's always handy. He does that as well in Alien vs. Predator.
Yeah.
I think to try and justify it on a cerebral level, my really, tacky choice is that he's obviously married to Miljovic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when a director is filming someone that they are married to, sometimes there's something where you're like, they get to sort of show what they see or whatever, and there's a really loving thing across that. That's what I'll say to myself anyway, to make myself feel better.
Like, the male gaze is the husband's gaze.
Yeah. Does that make it better?
I don't know, because I think about that film, Tarzan the Ape Man.
Oh, right, I've not seen that.
By Derek.
Yeah.
Is naked through most of it.
Oh, God.
And it is directed by John Derek, who was her husband.
Oh, no.
And it is an extraordinary film that you often forget is called Tarzan the Ape Man, because most of the time you're just watching by Derek in the scene.
God.
And I think it's very much the husband's male gaze.
Right, fair enough. Maybe it's just an even worse version of the male gaze.
I don't know.
Maybe when Tim Burton was filming Helena Bonham Carter as a monkey in Planet of the Apes, that was
really bad husband male gaze. Yeah. This is what I see. I see a fucking ape.
Yeah.
Every morning coming down for breakfast.
Yeah. He was trying to warn us or something, yeah. Oh, God.
Now.
Yeah.
Subcategory.
Hello.
Kermode won't answer it, but will you?
Anyone over 45 you interview won't answer it.
Troubling boners, worrying why-dones.
Easy. Most recently?
Yeah.
All of mine are like, I watch any film and I just go, like, this is troubling. Recently, I think Booksmart. The scene in the bathroom at the party with the two of them, I think that, for me, if I can sort of justify it rather than just being like, I'm watching two women get off, it really accurately represents the first sort of sexual fumblings you have at that age, usually at parties and all that thing. I think it's really nicely directed, not the male gaze, Olivia Wilde.
Female gaze.
Yeah. Exactly.
She's also married to all of them. Yeah. the wife gaze.
Square, that's all good.
Yeah.
But I think I just, you can't help but be transported back to being that age and kind of just trying to, this confusing, weird world, and it's so intimidating and so strange. And the reason it's troubling is they are very young, and also you feel like, there is a slight amount of voyeurism, I guess, in watching it. But also it's really beautifully filmed, so you don't feel like it's too exploitative. But you just watch these people, and this, especially someone who's like not really done this before, but it's very, it's played a bit for laughs, but it's also played for the truth of it. And I thought that was really lovely, but also you can't help but go, oh, but yeah, they're both really fit. And that is, yeah. So that is my male gaze employing that. But I just thought, I love Booksmart, and you can't help but go, oh, they're also like, you just like watching them because they're so good on screen as well. Those two, the two leads. I mean, yeah, and I'm sure Who Framed Roger Rabbit comes up probably every second episode. That's one that, yeah.
But I don't find that troubling.
No?
I think she's very well drawn.
Yeah.
What is the objectively greatest film of all time?
I'm going to say, I don't know if you can say an objective film, but if I had to put someone down and just go, here's a film, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Good answer. A better answer than The Godfather.
Oh, Godfather. Well, I love The Godfather, but I just think if you wanted to show, it depends if you want to show someone what a movie is or what cinema is. Because like,
what's the difference to you?
To me, I think that cinema has a certain the ting of class to it that you probably want to show something which is certainly touches you on a more emotional level. Whereas if you just want a movie, which is something that you watch for 2 hours and transports you, and then it's over and it leaves an impression, but ultimately it's sort of done. I'd say something like that, something like Raiders of the Lost Ark, is just absolutely perfect. Because it's exciting and entertaining, and I feel like, you know, whenever someone's just trying to convey the idea of a movie, they'll either show like a bit of a Bond film or a monster or something like an action film like Indiana Jones. And I just think, and if you wanted the best example of that kind of film, I think that it's yet to be beaten.
Yeah.
It's just everything about it's perfect from beat to beat to beat, and also from a screenwriting point of view, it's one of those films that you can dissect, you know, second by second, and go, there's not a wasted moment in this film. It all needs to be there, and it all just ties together so beautifully.
And the introduction of Marion in it is one of the great intros to a character.
Yeah.
Such a great, her first scene is like, that's a fucking entrance.
Do you watch a lot of those YouTube videos where they deconstruct shots and they sort of deconstruct scenes and things, like Every Frame of Painting or those?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them. They're very good, Every Frame of Painting.
I love them. There's one about that. There's that shot which is the fact that Spielberg will often, in a scene, he'll have like, it was Spielberg one, as it was about Spielberg one, and it was, you go into her bar and then you see her in the drinking contest, and it just tennis back and forth between the two of them, and you realise actually we've only been watching one shot, but it's really funny and it's witty and it's an amazing way. She doesn't say anything; it's just through her actions, and that's the perfect way of conveying character, right? It's just you just watch her actions and you go, "Great, I know who this person is." I think you can dissect every bit of that film and go, "There's an amazing choice. There's a brilliant choice." I even think Last Crusade stands up as an absolute
Last Crusade.
The Temple of Doom, slightly, you know, now it's slightly different. There's other things you have to grapple with about that. Also great. But yeah, I just think that is a brilliant movie.
Can we ever forgive Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Can we? Are they going to try and make another? Was that on the horizon?
I sort of think they have to.
Yeah.
To make up for it. Or, I don't know. Or, either have to make up or delete every copy of it and pretend it never happened. I'll go along with it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'll go, all right, if we're going to pretend it didn't happen.
That's great.
That's
like they
fine.
Did, they're going to do with Alien 3, right? Isn't there? Well, at one point there was going to be a Neil Blomkamp film that sort of went, hey, it's new.
Newt's like the fine. New Terminator ignores all the other Terminators except 1 and 2.
Is that right? Yeah. There you go. I think that's going like to be that. A new trend as well. We're going to see that happening.
Just part of the trailer is, hey guys, before we show you this, we're all agreed, yeah? We're pretending Kingdom of the Crystal Skull never happened. Okay.
Fine.
I'm happy.
Fine with that.
And
Arrival. I'll just chuck in Arrival because Nish chose that, I think, for his film of the decade, maybe.
That was his film that made him cry the most of the decade.
Oh, okay, yeah. But I just think that is if you're talking about cinema, I think that's beautiful cinema. Right? It's all about communication, which is what cinema's about. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
But I know that's been discussed already, so I'll chuck that in.
It's a cracker. What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
The Avengers.
Avengers Assemble.
Avengers Assemble.
Is it?
It just pulls me through. We've had Hot Fuzz on this before.
Yeah.
Thanks, Fennell. That was a great... I mean, every one of her choices was one of mine as well. I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. So like Hot Fuzz, does the same. Hot Fuzz I can just watch over and over again. Avengers Assemble, they just, the films that just drag you through. It's that properly, like, you just see it on, you're like, I'm going to watch this now. And there's something about that, something about Avengers Assemble where every scene throws forward to the next scene, and you just then it, you just find yourself tripping, and you can't stop watching it. I think it's absolutely, yeah, it's just so much joy in that. I'm not part of the new band of doesn't like superhero films.
No,
I think they have their place, and like, I think Avengers Assemble is just really, it's a lovely put together film. It came out around the same time as Cabin in the Woods, right? Joss Whedon was having that, like, that run, another film that I can watch over and over again. Because I think someone said on this podcast, but, like, it's every horror film. It's everything. And you can actually spot different things each time, and there's little clues and things in that. I can easily watch that one over and over again as well. Whedon has a real, ability for that.
He's very clever, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a bit of J.J. Abrams about him. In terms of storytelling, I think he's just very good at, like, this follows this follows this, and it's, and you're hooking very quickly. And
yes, yeah.
Smart. smart people, actually. You're in comedy.
Yeah.
What's the film that made you laugh the most? Change this from the funniest to the film that makes you laugh the most.
Because the best comedy film, because that's, like, it's Spinal Tap, so you can't really... Black Dynamite. Have you seen Black Dynamite?
You fucking hell, I love it.
Love that film. It's so stupid. And that's the one I just laughed at the most. It's so weird as well.
Yeah.
There's a bit where he, like, he's in a helicopter and he won't stop laughing. That's just really funny. It's a bit like an episode of Garth Marenghi as well. There's like details in terms of the making of the film that obviously it's like a spoof. So there's bits about the making of the film, but also it's funny in its own merits. And all the performances, because no one is winking at the camera, because no one is going, this is funny.
Yeah.
Everyone, is it Michael J. White?
Yes.
Yeah. He plays it, because he's in, like, the Dark Knight. Like, he's like, he's just playing it dead straight. Everyone's playing it dead straight, and that makes it so much funnier. Yeah, I love that film. And I feel it makes me laugh the most as well, because I think you got your Anchormans and all those, which are great, but not many people have seen Black Dynamite, and I sort of hold it to my chest and go, "This, I love this, and it's mine, and I'll watch it to cheer myself up whenever I can."
Lovely. That hasn't come up before.
Oh, great.
We don't like to be negative. We'll do it quick. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
I think it's been mentioned on this before, but Project X is a...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a film that's, like, bad at its soul. Like, I can forgive so much about... Films are so hard to make.
Yeah.
Films are... You know, better than anyone. You're like, you've made your own, and it was incredible, and it's a miracle that it was good, because how do you make good films,
really,
right?
It's really hard.
So, yeah, films are bad. Sometimes it's the editing thing. But I think, like, at conception stage, Project X seemed to be, what if horrible people smashed up a house and suffered no consequences? And so that's why I'm like, one. But, like, I am so forgiving. I love bad films as well. Like, bad B-movies or all those things, I absolutely love them. But some films, you're like, a bit like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, you're like, I think there's something just at the core of this which is bad. Things like, as well, I haven't seen it, but, like, I get the vibe that the Queen's Corgi, you know, when, like...
I've heard that it's evil.
like, because they Trump's in it, and he's, like, making jokes about, like, grabbing by the puppy and all that stuff. And you're like, I don't think this is, like, good, whatever's going on here.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Funny to have on the face that this film might be evil on a kid's film.
Just like something like at the heart of it, there's something just wrong.
Tom Neenan, you've been a wonderful guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
You may not be all men, but you're a lovely one.
Thank you so much.
Now, when you went for a run at 75, which actually was really young, and I think when you pick that number, I think when you get to 75, you'll regret it.
I'll be like,
I still feel very young, but
I mean, I hope I'm still running. In my mind, I'm still running at 75.
No, are still running, and you're still eating McDonald's as well, with your bottle of red wine, thinking sideways is the happy world.
It's the happiest film of all time.
And you're running in the park.
Yep.
You've got your bag of McDonald's in one and your red wine.
My God, I'm so happy.
Yeah, you're so happy. And then suddenly, very quickly, your heart just seizes up. And you go, oh, fuck, I predicted this.
Yeah.
And you fall over in the mud. People, everyone's good in this, in the future.
Nice.
And they all run over and they try and resuscitate you.
Yeah.
but I'm afraid you're dead.
Yeah.
Now, I get called over, Brett, would you mind clearing up this mess? And I'm like, oh, fine. But it was like winter, so you were covered in mud, but a lot of it frozen around you.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to actually get you off the ground. I had to start digging around.
Yeah.
Bits of mud and soil and the ground, cement, because even near a pathway, there's a lot of it. I managed to get you all in one piece, but with other bits.
Around. I like that. I like being in touch with the earth.
So stuff you in a coffin, but unfortunately the coffin I got for you was exactly your size and there's more of you than I predicted. So stuff you in, I'm going to chip away. I actually have to cut off a bit of your arm, but no one's going to notice because it's fine. It's right pressed against the edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I get all of you in, I put that bit that I cut off, I stack that over your head, put it under your head, no one knows, it's fine. Packed you all in.
Yeah.
It's Rambo in that coffin right now.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately there's only room for one DVD that we can slide in the side next to your cut off bit of arm.
Sure.
You can take to the other side, and on the other side, it's movie night every night.
Yeah.
What film are you taking to show when it's your movie night?
Can I investigate something?
Yeah.
It's the DVD. It's the physical artifact of the DVD, right?
DVD. It gets converted into 35mm celluloid when it's up there.
I'm going to take a swing with this. You won't like the initial bit, but allow me to explain. The Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. But I'm not taking... Here's the twist.
Yeah.
I'm not taking the film discs.
Right.
I'm taking the making of.
Wow.
Because making of is like a brilliant film. It's a man's endeavour.
Mm-hmm.
You find out all about how they did it all, how they planted Hobbiton in 1999.
Wow.
And that's what I go to. That's my happy place, is watching how they made it. I watched the making of Lord of the Rings. I would never watch the Lord of the Rings ever again. But I watched the making of Lord of the Rings like once a year.
It's a good answer.
Do you want something else?
But it's not technically a film, and I don't.
You want
think
one film?
I can allow it, unless that film is called something special, and it was like
its own documentary, release, like Lost in the Mountain.
Yeah.
Okay. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Great. The first one.
Yeah.
Love the first one.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
You're going to have a lovely time. You can tell the people up there about the making of Lord of the Rings.
I will do, and I'll tell. There's another Gore Verbinski as well, so I'm happy about that.
There you go. You love him. I love him.
It's brilliant.
He also made Mouse Hunt. He's your favourite director.
He's just brilliant. And the Cure for Wellness, which is odd, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, enjoyed that a lot. Me and Emerald went to see it. Loved it.
Nice.
Now, Tom Neenan,
mm-hmm.
is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, listen to or watch before you go?
I'll say I'm at T Neenan on Twitter, and you can check out Tom Neenan's Not All Men on BBC Sounds and wherever you get wherever you're listening to this GD podcast.
It's very, very funny.
God bless you.
Tom Neenan. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a wonderful death.
Enjoy Overlord.
See you soon.
See you soon.
Good day. So that was episode 80. Get your tickets for the live show with Tom Allen, February 26th from the Dice app. And head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the really good extra stuff with Tom Neenan. Boy, do us a favour. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And instead of writing a review, write about the film that means the most to you and why. I look at them. You should have a look at them. The stories people leave are beautiful, all of them. Plus, it helps numbers, means more people can see it. I can keep making it. More I can keep drinking craft beer. We can be happy forever until we all die. Thank you so much to Tom Neenan for doing the show and for being so great. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Straxton Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics. Lisa Lydon for the artwork. Now, some of you have been asking, where are my films of the year? The thing is, I've been a very busy boy this year, last year, and I didn't have time to see all of the films. So I've spent this month trying to catch up on all the films that I haven't seen. And by the end of the month, I've set a date where me and Nish will do our films of the year once I've seen all the films of the year. Yes, it's late. Who cares? Well, you got a fucking problem with that. Grow up. All right, that'll be coming soon. Next week's guest, there will be another amazing guest. I hope I will see you there. But in the meantime, have a lovely week and please be excellent to each other.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.